All right, well, we're back for another show. This one's going to be exciting. Another indoor soccer guest. Today I've got the president and owner of the Dallas Sidekicks, Jesse Yamas. Thanks for joining me. How you doing?
Oh, having a fantastic day. How are you doing? Thank
I'm
you for
doing
having
great.
me.
It's beautiful outside today. Get to talk sports. So it's
Love it.
how bad can that be for anybody?
100% I agree with you. I love it.
Well, you are part of such an iconic team in indoor soccer. The Dallas Sidekicks, been around for years and years, and my first time into indoor soccer, I kind of did the same thing. I got a historic team, the St. Louis Ambush, and it's kind of cool, all the history. But how did you get to the Sidekicks? Like, what's your background and how'd you get into sports?
So I grew up in Burbank, California. I loved sports as a child. Met my first professional indoor soccer player when I was 9 years old. Went to the LA Lasers against the Baltimore Blast. I have a coach out there. His name was Stanko Bilaver. Him and my dad would coach the team. And he's a big Croatian guy. He's actually in the California Soccer Hall of Fame. He still has a semi-pro team out there, well connected in the community. And he took us to watch Baltimore Blast versus the LA Lasers. And then after the game ended, he took us to the locker room because he knew half of the team and got to meet those guys. And I was like, dude, this is so awesome. I remember back in the day still very clearly all the guys with the Vaseline on their knees that smelled like Bengay. The locker room was so cool. I'm like, man, this is awesome. And this is what I want to do. So at that point, I really dedicated myself to soccer, worked really hard. At 18, I went to Mexico, tried out for a third division team in Mexico, ended up staying out there. And what a lot of people don't know is I went out to try out as a player. Back then, I was 30, 40 pounds lighter than I am now, but I was much more athletic. I could play
Were we
multiple
off? Were
positions.
we off?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I went out there, and the last day of the tryout, the goalkeeper doesn't show up. And they're like, hey, anybody else want to play goalie? I'm like, I'll give it a shot. So they say, hey, we don't want you as a field player, but we think we have some potential as a goalkeeper. So I
Did you
jumped
train
in there.
as a goalkeeper before that,
I
or?
did not. I did not. But I played like in high school on the club team every once in a while when they, hey, go in there. We need a sweeper keeper. I would go in at those moments. So I was good to have the good ball skills because that was right when the rule changed. So I was trying out in 95. The rule changed in 94 for the World Cup. So it's kind of had the advantage of being able to play with my feet. So I stayed out there. I bounced around third division, second division, 1A, first division for about 6 years. Then I came back to the US. I was actually on the El Paso Patriots for 2 seasons in the USISL League back in the day. You know, we'd play against all the guys up in Seattle and Portland and Vancouver before they became part of the MLS. Played there for 2 seasons. At the conclusion of my second season, the Dallas Sidekicks drafted me. That was my first connection to the Dallas Sidekicks. This was in 02. My good friend Jim Tolbert was the general manager at that time, signed me as the backup goalkeeper to Sagu. I played about 7 or 8 games that season, won rookie goalkeeper of the year. I was coming back in my second season. I was pumped. And funny story then, at the end of my first season of the Sidekicks is when I first meet Ed Puschkarich, who was coaching the Texas Spurs back in the day. And I'm just thinking to myself, we laugh and we have these conversations. Who would have known 20 years later, 21 years later, I'd be president and minority owner of the Dallas Sidekicks. So fantastic. I love the fact that I'm back here. Love this organization. End of that, start of the second year, I tore my ACL. So I was out for the second season. And then the Sidekicks went away. That's when Don Carter and Sonny Williams, they pulled the plug on the Sidekicks because of all the money now going to outdoor soccer. Basketball was now filling up the arena. Hockey, they no longer needed content. So then during that period from 04 to 12, 2012, I got all my coaching licenses. I became an AD at a small French school. When I arrived at that school, they had 5 soccer teams. When I left 13 years later, they had 49 teams in 8 different sports and 2 state championships. And then I was looking for that next challenge in my life. My wife looked at me, you're crazy. I got an offer to come in as an assistant coach, not making a dime. I said, I know, I see the vision. If they do it right, I know we can bring this thing back to where it was. Started off as an assistant coach. after my first season, they hired me as director of team operations. And at the start of my third season, they promoted me to director of ops / general manager. And then COVID hit. And that was the year where we all know if we were involved in sports, it was one of the probably the most difficult things ever. We were bleeding. Well, you know, I had to talk to the ownership at that point, say, hey, we cannot take another year off, you know, because we had multiple pauses. If we do that, we're going to lose all this momentum. And they decided to keep it on board. We were one of seven teams that participated that year. At the conclusion of that year, I really learned the business side, and very thankful to the owners who were teaching me and bringing me along and mentoring me. So I learned the business side. They promoted me to president / GM. I built a team that qualified for the playoffs for the first time since 14-15.
Yeah.
At the end of my first year, I decided that season I'm going to become a minority owner. The opportunity came on board. I said, I see it. I'm going to put some money where my mouth is, and I'm going to push this thing forward. Last season was my first year as president and business development. I really let the team, you know, kind of just go on their own, and I gave them some guidance and mentoring. And this season now I'm full board, same thing, president and business development, and we've seen everything just grow. When you see where we were when we came back 5 years ago, having zero data, you know, zero social media, to now over 100,000 in our database, you know, 35,000 in all of our social media combined followers now. Our revenue has gone up. You know, 3 years ago, we had 27 season tickets. Last year, we were at 120 season tickets. This year, we're already at 140 season tickets, looking to get to 300 before the season starts. Just to see that, and every single year, you know, revenue going up, sponsorship revenue going up, and then you really start developing these really cool partnerships. You know, the Eddie Nahida guy coming on board, the owner, you know, ex-NBA great. That was, nobody knows. It takes about 2.5 years to get someone like that to finally come on board, right? You know, right. You got to talk to them. They got to really get to know you. And I can give any advice to anyone who wants to do business. You have to develop a relationship, and you've got to maintain a relationship. And any type of business, that's sports, banking, anything. It's always about relationships, as you know. So that's my story.
I'll tell you what, that's a great story. Just, you know, from, you know, being that kid that got to go in the locker room. And, you know, I always look back, like, you know, I was more of a American football, you know, fan growing up. I played soccer as a kid. When I grew up, I was in the Lancaster, Pennsylvania area. So I was close to Harrisburg and Hershey, PA. Hershey had a team called the Hershey Impact. And I remember my soccer team going out there playing, you know, and I thought it was the best thing ever, getting to meet some of the players. And now it's cool to be on this side of it and being able to make an impact on so many people. Right. And just memories that we, you know, are part of creating. So it's really cool. When I first got a call from the USL, because when I got into indoor soccer, the USL was who ran the major indoor soccer league. And at the time, I had arena football in St. Louis, and they're like, you should put a team in St. Louis. It's a great soccer market, you know, like all the sales pitch stuff.
Right.
And I started looking at it, and I was like, wow, this is a good market. So we ended up putting the St. Louis Ambush back in, and it was crazy. I became like, any of the players that have played know that I was a crazy owner. I'm so intense and competitive. And we struggled, you know, joining back then. I mean, there were seven teams, and, you know, you mentioned Baltimore Blast and Milwaukee Wave, these teams that have been around forever. And quite frankly, they had a lot more money than I did. And so, you know, the player pay was quite a bit different from our team to theirs, but we were in the top, you know, few, you know, one or two for attendance and tickets. So like, how has that transition been for you? Because, you know, there's really like two big aspects of building a team, right? You need the product and then the business. And a lot of times, you know, people get caught up on the product because that's the fun, you know, and that might be the passion side of it. I don't think people realize how hard it is to sell tickets and
oh yeah
sponsorships. I mean, especially this day and age, think about all the competition there is for entertainment, even like at your arena. I mean, there's Topgolf there. There's, you know, it's an outdoor mall. Like, there's so many options. So it's definitely changed a lot over the last, you know, even 10 to 20 years.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. To sell a ticket, you know, that's one of the things that we found so attractive about indoor soccer, because you look at outdoor soccer, and there's so many teams, and plus those valuations of those franchises, to me, those are not even real. It's crazy. But it's so saturated now. You have, you know, the MLS, USL, a couple divisions of USL now, a couple division of, you know, the NISA. You got NPSL, UPSL. You've got so much in outdoor soccer. And even though we're a huge country, I just feel like now that's getting oversaturated, right? Then you take the second point. We're here in Dallas. We're the, I think, saw it a couple weeks ago. We're the one area that has the most professional teams in the world. In the world, it's crazy to think about that. Dallas has the most professional franchises in the world. So that's another factor. Then you take about all the fun new stuff. You got, you know, the PGA golf course. You got the Topgolf. You got tons of different type of entertainment.
Amusement park. Yeah, every, I mean,
that's so difficult. But then you say, hey, we do have a unique product. This is something very different, that if people actually come out one time, and fans back in the day remember that, but if you get the younger crowd back out to these games, which is our goal, get the younger ones to become the long-term fans, they're going to love this. And we just got to remember. That's why I love our new head coach. You know, he said, we're going to rock and roll, because it is entertainment. We're entertainment at the end of the day. Uh-huh. Wins, that's phenomenal. That's badass. But you look at some of the teams in other sports that have the best attendance aren't necessarily the ones that are winning championships. It's what's going on during in-game, right? How do I keep those fans engaged? Yeah. Now with technology, you've got apps. Now you got all that fun stuff. How do I keep these people entertained all the time? So I remind my front office staff all the time, remember, we're entertainment. We're entertainment. Let's come up with the fun stuff. You know, let's see what can get people engaged. Yeah,
not everyone is the diehard soccer fan that's coming out. And right. So you make sure you're providing entertainment. And what I looked at is, I mean, you need to keep the kids engaged, because if they're running around nagging the parents, they're less likely to come back. So the more 100%. Things you can do to keep them engaged is crucial. And I think, like, with the Sidekicks, I'm sure you probably come across it. I remember when I was in St. Louis, I would get a lot of people, you know, calling or talking to me at events, and they'd be like, they're about my age. I'm in my mid 40s. I'd be like, hey, when I was a kid, I remember going to games, and now I want to take my kids. And so, like, it becomes, you know, a family tradition almost to get their kids out. And I think, you know, we're a lot more accessible than, you know, a lot of other sports teams out there, you know, to the 100%. Players on the field. Things like that.
Yep. Being out in the community, going to the schools, talking to people. You just don't see that in really any other sport, unless it's a really big event, to the games. And just creating, like you said, like you're talking about, equity dates, making sure people are excited about going to those same ones, because they brought little Johnny and Susie with them, and then they're going to do the same thing with their kiddos eventually. That's the goal, right? That's the goal.
What do you think really attributed to, you know, the growth and success that you guys have had over the last 5 years?
It's grassroots. You've got to go out and you got to make relationships, build relationships with club directors, church directors, everybody, and then let the kiddos come and enjoy it. Because I believe, I truly believe, and we saw that last year. The previous year, we actually made the playoffs, and we had less tickets purchased and less attendance when we made the playoffs. This year we went 1-23. We had a higher percentage of tickets purchased and attendance than when we made the playoffs. So it really was about that relationship, the follow-up, making sure ticket salespeople are going and talking to fans that are having the first experience. It's always about the relationship. People want to feel important, right? You know how it is. We walk in and someone says, hey, Jesse, how you doing today? You're like, hey, how you doing? I'm coming back to this place, right? I'm coming back again. Right. You walk into your favorite bar and they already have your drink ready. That's the kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
That's what fans and people are looking for. They want to feel important.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's a big, big piece of it. You know, it's just making them feel like they're part of the family, and
100%.
You know, they're gonna do what they can for you. Have you guys done anything in the youth soccer space? Like, have you guys created like a youth club or academy? Are you trying to stay club neutral? What have you guys done there?
We have always decided to stay club neutral. You know, from experience, I know in other cities, we did a big survey with other directors and then local fans about if you have to play against the people that you're going to support every single weekend and they're probably beating you or not having a good experience, you're probably not going to go support that team. Yeah. So we stay club neutral. We want to make sure everybody's welcome. You know, we talk to one big director from another club. We tell him, hey, we're Switzerland. I know you guys may not get along, but we want you both at the game because you want an opportunity eventually for your kiddos, if they're not going to make it an outdoor, come to indoor or vice versa, you know, coming back and forth. You want a professional platform for these kids.
Yeah, I've done it both ways. And you know, in Lakeland with the Tropics, it really pissed people off in the other clubs.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, you got this 5,000, you know, kid club that is now part of your umbrella, but now every other club hates you.
So, yeah, exactly.
So it's definitely, I think the club neutral, St. Louis, we were club neutral. We've been club neutral with our other clubs in the league that we're in now, but no, it's a lot of fun. How have you guys been able to tap into like some of the history of the Sidekicks? Because I'm sure there's still a lot of players, you know, out in the, like living in the community.
Correct. Yes. So same thing. There was a big disconnect for about 3 or 4 years. And I knew because I was one of the former players. And sometimes when a new ownership group comes in the beginning, and I'm talking about 13, 14, there wasn't as much, okay, come on guys, you're a former player. Here's a ticket for you, right?
Right.
There wasn't a connection. Now, it was very important for me. I said, let's create a suite, which we actually have a suite that's wrapped just like this at our arena. And okay. It's called the Legend Suite. And we have a good database now, phone calls. We've got one young lady in here who calls them weekly when there's games and then sends out an email and says, hey, the suite's available. There's food and drinks for you guys. So that's been a part. And it's the year one, very little return. Year two, it improved. This year now, we're including them in podcasts. We're going to include them in a lot more things. So it's slowly growing again, because I keep telling these guys, the Sidekicks are the reason why Dallas is number two or three biggest soccer hotbed in the nation, is because of you guys. What you guys did back in the 80s and 90s, playing and then going back out in the community and coaching again, you guys grew this place. That's because of you. Yeah. That's not because of anything I did. I'm grateful that, you know, we're able to have this organization and take the rich history, and now hopefully we're going to make it even better. And it's because of you guys. And that's my message all the time. And we're very thankful. And a suite and some drinks and some food is the least that I can do for them.
Yeah. So, I think it's important to tap into that, especially if you have it. I mean, right. You got some people have paved the way and have gotten a name out there. And I know in St. Louis, we used to do alumni games, and they were really popular too. We'd bring everybody in, and it was like a big reunion for those guys. They'd be sharing war stories in the locker rooms and got ice in their knees for a 20-minute game. But it was fun, and the fans loved it. So it was always good. And you know, back when, probably about when the Sidekicks restarted, I started doing a lot of work in Dallas to bring that team back too. I was actually pretty interested in, I guess it was down for a year or two, and the league really wanted a team there. And, you know, I love the area. I think it's a great venue, great part of, you know, Dallas. And so I was glad to see that it came back. I mean, because I did a lot of research, met with Rena, met with a lot of people, met with, you know, former player of sidekicks that was big there, Tattoo. And we went to this Brazilian steakhouse in Frisco, which I really miss. I need to go back to that one. That's a good steakhouse.
Anytime you're in town, let me know. We'll go.
Yeah, that's a good thing about Dallas is there's some great food.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've got my spots in every city, and there's a bunch in Dallas. So,
oh yeah,
good. So, what kind of plans do you guys have? You know, is there any like technology or more modern things that you guys are using to like engage fans or market?
So yeah, you know, you got all the basics, the SEOs, all that fun stuff to kind of capture some audience. That way, we do. You know, 2020 was a blessing in disguise because it forced us to create everything to go in the digital world now, right? We went and created our own app. I think we're one of two teams in the league that has an app. And you can buy your merch, you can have your tickets, everything in one location. Get team news all in the palm of your hand. So that really is what we love. So now we're going to take it a next step. We're looking at notifications. We're looking at, you know, big ticket packages where you can go in and buy one ticket and then now it offers you merch and everything all in one, the palm of your hand. So we're continuing to build. All the things cost money, so we have to make sure we do a good evaluation to see what the return will be. And then the obvious is you're always looking for some of those investors that see the vision to come on board to push it to the next level. That's what we're always doing.
What's like a day-to-day, you know, routine for you? Like how's your time span? I mean, you're the top guy operating the team. Where do you spend your time and what's it like on a day-to-day basis?
So I learned that this business, you've got to be very, very structured and you're always going to have some fires to put out as the day goes on. So it doesn't always stay exactly the same, but Mondays, we always have a good team meeting. I meet with each department, make sure everything is going smooth, what tasks they're working on. I start looking at all of my emails, making sure that all the meetings that I have planned for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, they're all ready and aligned. Tuesday, I'll usually have my sit-down meetings with potential clients or existing ones. Wednesday, I do all my arena tours. So I try to book 3 to 4 arena tours. I'll bring people to the office, potential sponsors. Take them to the arena, walk them around. Then after that, after I do those meetings, I do follow up with them on Thursday. Then I meet existing clients out to kind of entertain, make sure everything's happy, make sure they like everything that's going. And then Friday is kind of a recap with the whole team and then make sure everything for next week is set up. And then the team is planning all the stuff on the weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays, if they're going to have events. A marketing team starts to make sure everything is done. And then we start planning the following week. So it's just kind of now we've got a good schedule and structure. And then in the meantime, if anything else is coming in, we're putting up fires in between.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I try to be as organized as possible, but there's always going to be some reactive stuff.
Organized chaos.
Exactly.
How much do you get involved on the soccer ops side? Do you and the coach, you know, put the roster together, sign players? How's all that work for you guys?
So this year I'm a little bit more involved because we promoted our GM got pushed up to the NWSL. So when she left, I had to bring in a gentleman over here. I say young, but a gentleman that was our director of ops has great relationships in the community. So this year he's coming in as an assistant GM. So I'm kind of mentoring and guiding him, but he does 90%. And then if he has a question or two, he comes to me, but he's doing 90% of it with the coach, him together will get involved. I try not to get involved as much as possible because I know there's a business side, but they always know that I am available for a phone call or for a meeting if they really need me.
Are you kind of like the prime, you know, like partnership, you know, seller or like relationship builder as the president? Is that kind of
yes
on you?
Yes, that's on me. And now I've got a couple young interns that are looking to get into this career that I brought alongside me. Now that I'm mentoring them on how to do this. Yeah. So eventually we may hire them, one of them as maybe a VP or a assistant sales or sponsorship. And then they can start doing a lot of the stuff that we do with new clients. And then they will maintain. I only come in if they really need me.
Yeah, and it's, I think a lot of people don't realize, like, I mean, at this level, there's not a huge front office staff.
Right.
You know, so like a lot of people, you know, most people have multiple roles or they have to do multiple things. So being versatile is important. But building those relationships and selling those high dollar sponsorships, a lot of times, you know, they're going to want to talk to somebody high level with the organization, and you're out there in the community. I mean, I think you do a really good job from a social media standpoint. Like, you know, even on LinkedIn, you know, there's a lot of people that really neglect LinkedIn. And, you know, I've sold, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in small sponsorship deals on LinkedIn, you know, just from posting on LinkedIn and kind of getting on the radar of people. So I noticed that you do a really good job on that as well, just, you know, on the LinkedIn side, which I think is crucial.
Yeah, it is a great tool. I didn't realize what a great tool it was until someone told me, hey, you need to start doing this as well. And I've seen the growth just in, from, like you said, people contacting me from LinkedIn. And yeah, I didn't realize that either. So that's, you have a very good point there. It does, yeah. Very good tool. Very good tool.
Are you guys doing, you mentioned like podcasts before. Are you guys doing anything on a team level for a podcast?
So yes, we just started. And you'll see probably an announcement in the next 30 to 45 days. We have a new investor that's going to come in, and their whole world is media.
Okay.
So we're going to change our strategy and go from media and soccer and get the fans to really know the players so that they develop that empathy. Everybody, once, you know, you look at the Real Madrids, you look at the Barca's, and they get to know the players just a little bit, and people love them.
Yep.
If they lose, they feel sorry for them. If they win, they love them because they know them. They feel like they know them. So, yes, to answer your question.
The stories, everybody's got a background.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Might touch somebody in this group or that group. So I think that's where teams need to do better, is getting that information out there. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I need to do a better job of that. But, like, now, I mean, even with, like, how we're recording this podcast, it's simple. I'm old and not tech savvy. So if I can do it, anybody can.
Right.
Information, I mean, that's what people want. They want to know. And you said it earlier, they want to feel like they're part of it. So the more they know, the more likely they're going to feel that way.
100%. You know, that's the thing they were mentioning to us. They said they would go do events, and people would come up to them and you'd be like, nice to meet you. They're like, meet you, I know you. Just because they watch them so much, they really feel that they're part, actually in the room listening to their conversations. You know, so that's great.
Do you guys do like autograph sessions after the games?
Yes, sir.
In the concourse?
Yes, sir. We do autograph sessions after the field. We do clinics where we have players. We do restaurants for Champions League games. We try to do as much as we can so people can get to know the players. And the camps, I'm telling you, summer camps are probably the most important thing to do. And now we're going from 3 camps to 7 camps this year, which we've never done before. And it's just going to keep building that rapport. When the kids get to know the players, they're going to want to come to the games. That's huge.
The camps are a big area that I've really been stressing lately to owners in our league, because I've never capitalized on it. And you have that base already there. And so I think that's a whole nother business within the business, and the way I look at it,
you know, 100%.
And you get it there. So how's the squad looking for the upcoming season?
So we've re-signed 90% of the team. Our head coach was just announced yesterday.
Yeah.
So now he's going to come in and start plugging away and bringing the pieces that he wants. So in my opinion, with the team that we had last year and with 2 or 3 pieces, we should be right back in the playoff mix.
Okay.
And compete.
How often do you get like that itch, like you want to go out and get back on the field? I mean, because it's hard, and I wasn't a soccer guy, but like I would find myself out at practices every now and then. And, you know, just getting involved you know, kicking the ball around and just running around. So is that, do you ever have those moments, or are you pretty much like no desire to get back out there?
When I started off as an assistant coach and then the director of team operations, every once in a while I would have that feeling. The last couple of years, not so much. I think I've kind of gone away. I feel like if I'm on the field, if I get on the field and I knock it a couple times, I may change my mind. But from up here, when I'm watching from the game, I'm like, no.
Yeah, no. These guys are too fast now. It's yeah, physical, exactly. Like I'm hurting.
Yeah.
That's fun.
100%.
So, like growing up, did you follow any other sports besides soccer?
Yes, I'm a Raiders fan, so I did love football. I'm a USC fan, so I watch college football all the time. To me, college football is better than the NFL, but I love football. Right. I love baseball. I love the Dodgers, and I love the Lakers. Those are my teams. So, yeah, have you watched the series, the Jerry Buss series, the Lakers one? Oh, no. Dude, you have to watch it. It will be so inspirational, especially because you'll see that a lot of the struggles that they went through, that he went through to bring the Lakers and the business side, it shows some of the stuff, and the dude was like close to losing it all.
Yeah.
And then he transitioned. His mentality too was, I'm going to make this entertainment. I'm going to bring the movie stars. I'm going to do all this. And he changed the Lakers forever. I mean, it's a fascinating series.
Now, 1.2, I think they owned indoor soccer.
They did have the Lakers. Yeah, the Lasers. LA Lasers. Lasers. Yeah. Yep. Okay. LA Lasers.
I think Keith Tozer, the commissioner of your league, now I think he – did he play there or coach? I thought he did something.
He coached the LA Lasers. And funny story, he coached Ed Puskarage because LA, Ed played for the Lasers one season as well.
It's such a small world.
It is.
Once you're in. All right, so most of your teams are out that way. I'm going to check that out. What streaming service or what's it on?
It's on HBO.
Oh, HBO. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. You'll love it.
All right. How about, some random stuff. So Dallas area. Next time I'm there, what are some top places I should go eat?
Okay. If you love Italian, you got to go to Lombardi's or the Charles. Those two right there, you'll love. If you want some kind of new trendy Mexican food and the inside of the restaurant is phenomenal, it's called The Mexican. Okay, it's called The Mexican. That one's phenomenal as well. If you're looking for a good steak, I'm sure you've been to Nick and Sam's. Have you been to Nick and Sam's?
No.
Nick and Sam's, you got to go. That's the best steak ever, Nick and Sam's.
What area is that in?
That's all down in the Dallas area off of the Harry Hines. That's a really good spot, Turtle Creek area. And then if you're up in the Frisco area, and you want some Italian, Lombardi's is really good. If you want to do the Brazilian place, you got the Fogo de Chao or the Estilo Gaucho. If you don't want to go so much of a chain, because Fogo de Chao
is more chain. Yeah, the non-chain one.
Yeah, the Estilo Gaucho, that's really good. It's right there by Stonebriar Mall. You got, if you want some little low-key Mexican, you got Meseros and Mexican Sugar. Those are two really good places. Haywire, authentic Texan. Everything is local. The bar is phenomenal. The drinks are good. You'll love Haywire. That's really good. So, yeah.
Okay, good. Now I'm hungry, and it's lunchtime, so that's good.
Yeah. We talked about food. I'm ready to go get something to eat, too.
I love it. So this will be, what, your fifth season coming up or sixth?
Yeah, fifth season.
Okay. No, it's good. And I can tell you, I mean, the MASL is so darn competitive. Like, I mean, I see all these teams and, you know, I see you have the powerhouses that have been there for a while. And then, you know, even, you know, my old team that I sold, the Tropics, you know, they threw, it was like they were trying to get the all-star team in there.
Yeah.
And they still were not able to break through. And it amazed me. I was like, that's crazy. But the level of play, I don't think people realize. I mean, the level of play is just unbelievable. I mean, there's some great players from all over the world. you know, the league is definitely, you know, I was there when it, we merged, you know, the PASL and the MISL. And, you know, that first year after that was, I think, a little shaky, that first few years, and just kind of, you know, settling in. And I think it's been really solid. And I think there's a lot of great stuff that's been done from a marketing standpoint that I felt lacked back when I was in it. So it looks, you know, like somebody's kind of taking charge on that aspect of it. And it's really about like promoting. How do you promote the teams? How do you promote the players? Like, because at the end of the day, we're a business, and, mm-hmm. you know, people don't want to lose money.
Right.
Doesn't matter how big the passion is. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, break even or make money. So I think that it looks like it's really kind of headed in a good direction.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
So, well, we'll keep in touch. I'm definitely going to get out to Dallas at some point, and maybe one day we'll be playing against each other, or an exhibition game or something. Are you kind of like a, what kind of like owner are you? Are you like a crazed, like, you know, shit talking owner? Are you like just, you know, quiet, reserved? Like, what are you going to be doing in your suite at the games?
At my suites and my games, I'm going to be having a good time. The first couple of years, I was probably the crazy guy. But now I'm always entertaining someone. I'm always bringing someone to the business side. So I'm more calm and chill and relaxed now and focused. I'm always looking at, okay, all the assets looking good. Okay, the Jumbotron, it came on at the right time. The premier sponsor, okay, we're good. That game is going on now. Okay, excellent. So I've kind of changed. I get to watch the team every once in a while, but it's more becoming, and I do the same thing now. Everywhere I go, it's awful. I go to the Cowboys Stadium, I go to Rangers. I'm not even watching the game. I'm going,
how much revenue do they bring in?
Yeah. Man, that's a great idea. How can we do that? Oh man, look at this. For a Tuesday afternoon, they're doing this because they want to bring people in the arena. That makes sense. So now I really don't get to enjoy the games. My family's always looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm just like, I'm just looking at this assets.
I always said, like, I like the road games better because, you know, there you're not getting pulled a million directions usually. You're not having to entertain, you know, and make sure you say hi to everyone, you know. So the away games for me were always fun just to kind of watch a game, you know.
Right.
And when somebody would, you know, we'd bring them on and they'd be like, yeah, I'm excited to watch the games, you know, working in the front office. I'm like, yeah, you really don't get to watch the games. It's a lot of work.
Right.
But those road games, we would take our staff a lot of times. In St. Louis, we had Kansas City right there, so it was a nice little drive. Chicago was in the league back then, so we would take the front office sometimes. And that was a good time just to be able to watch. But I'm the same way. Any stadium I go to, I'm looking at ideas. I'm trying to just get an idea of, you know, how much money they probably brought in from everything today.
Right.
You know, what's creative? I mean, you know, there's so many creative people out there. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. You know, you can grab an idea from somebody else and even tweak it sometimes. But I think if we stay as is, we die. And, you know, we have to constantly be looking for ways to improve the fan experience. And it sounds like you guys are, especially on the media side coming up. So that's exciting to see and excited.
100%.
Seasons. One season kickoff.
December 9th is our home opener.
Okay.
The league is able to start as early as November 15th. Okay. But our home opener is December 9th.
Yeah, I've always found like after the holidays or, you know, attendance typically has gone up. If you can limit how many are before in that, like that December month is tough. I don't want four games and I'm like, you know what? I'd rather be on the road, play maybe one game or two. And, you know, you hit that. But what's the craziest? This will be the last thing. What's the craziest kind of promo you've done?
Craziest promo we've done would have to probably be the Lucha Libre night. So we completely took two Mexican style wrestlers and we just put them out in the middle of the arena and we gave away Lucha Libre masks that night and the kids loved it. So we're going to take it to another level this year. They spent about 10 minutes in the middle. We turned all the lights off and the wrestlers were going at it. And after the game, they signed the autographs with the kids. So I believe this year, now we're going to actually put a full ring behind one of the goals and then sell tickets to come watch that. And then right afterwards, at halftime, we're going to turn off all the lights, focus on the ring while the players are inside and let them wrestle. And whoever has the VIP section will be able to come right up to the ring and watch it close. And then when that's done, they'll stay for autographs again. So yeah, just trying to be probably is the craziest we've done so far. And it was really good. And it'll be part of our Noche Mexicana probably forever now. So
Well, that's great. It was great to have you on. I appreciate your time. I know we've been going back and forth for a while to get you scheduled here. And I'm glad we were able to do it before the season gets too crazy for you. But thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Let me know when you're in Dallas.
Will do.